is Cahill against Holder. Mr. Thompson.
May it please the Court. Good morning. My name is Michael Thompson, and I represent the petitioner in this case, Jose Cahill. The matter before the Court is Mr. Cahill's petition for review of the Board of Immigration Appeals' order denying his motion to reopen his deportation proceedings. That motion was predicated on another petition he filed in Cook County Circuit Court, the court of his criminal conviction that underlied his deportation.
What do you think is the bearing on this of Shade against the United States?
Your Honor, in that case, in Shade, this circuit did hold that the rule announced in Padilla was a new rule and therefore that it was not retroactively applied. However, the court did not consider whether the rule fell into one of the enumerated exceptions to Teague's retroactivity bar because the parties did not dispute that issue. Now, the Supreme Court has a well-founded history of holding that it will not announce a new rule on collateral review unless it does fall into one of those enumerated exceptions. And the case of Henry v. Lynow, which is 492 U.S. 302.
I'm lost. The holding of Shade is that Padilla is not retroactive. Your client's petition in state court can be granted only if Padilla is retroactive. Since it's not retroactive, your client's petition can't be granted. Therefore, what's the point of sitting on your hands waiting for it?
Well, Your Honor, there's a couple objections I would have to that. First of all, the holding in Shade does not bind the Illinois state courts. The Illinois courts have not found that Padilla is not retroactive. In fact, Mr. K, who himself has a hearing that would be scheduled, that has been scheduled several times.
As I know, Illinois is perfectly free as a matter of state law to say that we will apply Padilla retroactively whether or not as a matter of federal law it has to be retroactive. But, of course, here we're supposedly applying federal law.
And, Your Honor,
there's something wrong with the conviction and a state decision that it's going to do something different from what federal law applies doesn't suggest there's anything wrong with the conviction.
Your Honor, it's our position that it does because the ruling of Shade should not be seen as dispositive here. The court did not consider whether the Padilla decision fell into one of the enumerated exceptions to the Teague retroactivity bar. Because that issue was not briefed, it was not argued.
If you're suggesting that it is still an open issue in this circuit whether Padilla is retroactive, I think you're barking up the wrong tree.
I'm not suggesting that it's an open issue, Your Honor. I'm suggesting that perhaps it should be because of the Supreme Court's prior precedent.
But it isn't. Let's proceed on the assumption that it isn't an open issue.
Your Honor, in that case, then yes, the state court conviction, which underlies the entire deportation proceeding, can be found. The state can hold that the conviction is invalid, even if it would not be under federal law. And since that conviction is the only thing underlying the deportation proceedings, then the Board of Immigration Appeals still needed to consider that when it determined whether or not to reopen the proceedings.
Why? I mean, that sounds like an argument that for purposes of federal law, a state conviction vanishes if a state decides for its own reason that it's not going to look at it. If it's expunged, for example, after 10 years. I thought it was pretty well established that if a state, for reasons of its own, decides that it's no longer going to count a conviction, it doesn't go away for purposes of federal law.
That is correct, Your Honor, but here we're dealing with something that fundamentally undermines the conviction, that being that...
Well, the whole point of Shade is to say that nothing fundamentally undermines that decision. Now, I'm sure you disagree with Shade, but it is what it is.
I understand that, Your Honor. But the difference is if the state has some sort of quirk of their own criminal law that provides some sort of safety net for people that say their conviction for a felony can be reduced to a misdemeanor or expunged, as Your Honor noted. That's not the same thing as something that implicates the fundamental right of the right to effective assistance of counsel that could invalidate an entire conviction. It's different for that reason.
Look, he was already removable at the time of his guilty plea in state court, wasn't he?
removable for being in the country. Mm-hmm. Perhaps, Your Honor, but that was not an automatic...
No, not perhaps. He was.
But it was not an automatic removing situation such as resulting from a conviction for a narcotics offense that he was convicted for. There may have been other remedies that could have prevented that removing.
But it seems to me that his plea to the drug offense wouldn't be dispositive of his ability to remain in the country legally. Because the way I view it, he was already removable at the time of his guilty plea.
And, Your Honor, he may have been removable, but he was not subject to the automatic deportation that comes with the drug offense that he did plead guilty to. There is a difference there, and he may have had possibilities for ways to contest his prior removability.
Give me one.
Well, Your Honor, I'm not familiar with the circumstances. I'm just saying they may have existed. I don't know that he did have them.
Well, exactly. They may have existed.
There were no deportation proceedings initiated against him until several years after that offense. That conviction was in 1994. The deportation proceedings in this case began in 2006 or 2007 for the 1994 conviction. The other issue, Your Honor, the Attorney General...
You know what bothered me? That the brief suggests that the board totally ignored the pendency of his petition for post-conviction relief. And when the board, in fact, expressly acknowledged that that was the basis for his motion to reopen. So any contention that the board committed a legal error by ignoring the basis for his motion has to fail.
Your Honor, the board did not ignore the fact of the petition. The board ignored the impact of that petition on the guilty plea and on his constitutional rights. The Padilla court recognized that non-citizen defendants have a fundamental right to be protected against unforeseen deportation in criminal matters. That was the heart of Padilla, that deportation for defendants such as Mr. Cahu is as much of, if not greater, a penalty than imprisonment or the possibility of conviction, and that therefore they have a right that must be protected.
Look, regardless of his odds of prevailing on his petition, until such time as the state court would vacate that conviction, that conviction is still final, and it would absolutely preclude him from obtaining any kind of cancellation of removal, for instance.
Well, Your Honor, that would ordinarily be true, but I think under the holding of Padilla, since there is a fundamental right here, there needs to be a protection of it.
Well, you're back to your disagreement with Shade again.
Well, because we're dealing with a state court context, Your Honor.
There isn't any federal right to have that conviction set aside. It's not just a matter of time until it gets set aside as a violation of federal law. Now, of course, the Supreme Court in the end may disagree with our holding in Shade. I rather expect the defendant in that case to file a cert petition. There is a conflict among the circuits. But here we are in the Seventh Circuit, and in the Seventh Circuit, there's no problem at all with the 1994 conviction.
And I understand that, Your Honor. I don't disagree with that, but there is in the state of Illinois, and that's where the conviction lies, and that's that conviction that serves as the basis for the deportation. And I know the court's position on that. If there are no further questions at this time, I'll reserve the remaining time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Mr. Goring.
Thank you. Your Honors, good morning. May it please the Court. Alex Goring on behalf of the Attorney General. Your Honors, if I may point out something that was stated earlier. Mr. Cahu was not found removable just on the basis of this conviction. He entered the United States illegally without permission from the United States government. That's at Administrative Record, page 461, which is the notice to appear. At page 297 and 298 of the Administrative Record, his counsel conceded that he was removable on this ground. So it's not as though absent this conviction, he wouldn't have been removed from the United States in any event. He has no permission to be here. He illegally entered the United States, actually on multiple occasions, and his counsel conceded that he was removable as such. I also think it's important in this case to note that this is an untimely motion to reopen. An alien may file one motion to reopen within 90 days. This motion is clearly not timely based on the board's prior June 2010 decision and the motion to reopen not being filed until, I think, 7 months later. In this case, because of the conviction, we do have the 8 U.S.C. 1252A2C bar to jurisdiction unless he raises a constitutional claim or question of law.
Or a question of law. It sounds like he's making a strictly legal argument.
Anybody who makes a claim
under Padilla can't be removed.
And I would say, even assuming...
It's either right or wrong as a matter of law.
Assuming it is a question of law, it's still incorrect. This own court's precedent is that a conviction is final for immigration purposes until it is vacated. His conviction hasn't been vacated. The board, and in fact, while he argues the board didn't consider the factors, as Your Honor noted, the board specifically considered that the sole basis for the motion was based upon the pending Padilla motion in state court. The board recognized it, but consistent with their policy of recognizing the finality of immigration proceedings, notwithstanding a pending collateral attack on a criminal conviction, the board exercised their discretion to deny this untimely motion to reopen. I think that's what's key here. Your Honors, if the court has no questions for me, I think I'll rest on the government's brief. Thank you.
Certainly, Mr. Goring. Anything further, Mr. Thompson?
Yes, briefly, Your Honor, just on the issue of untimeliness. Since the petition to reopen was based on the Padilla decision, which did not issue until, I believe it was March 31st of 2010, the timeliness issue doesn't apply to him because he didn't have a colorable claim until that decision was issued. He could not ask to reopen based on a decision that hadn't happened yet within the time period that was allowed to him. And as Your Honor noted, the issue of jurisdiction we are raising does fall under the subsection A2D of the relevant statute, section 1252, because we are raising both a question of law and actually a constitutional claim based on Padilla as well. And with that, if there are no further questions, then Mr. Cahill will rest on his brief.
Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement. In our final case,